wouldn't be a good Peter Ron.
Okay. We're on, right? Like the
throne. You're rolling. Okay.
First of all, it's Rosh Chodesh Shadda, the real Rosh Chodesh Shadda, and everything, Mishanis Mathatum Babam Besimcha, it is March 7th, 2011. Rabbi Reuben, I want you to tell the world the gift I gave you yesterday and charged you $1 million for. Was it a bargain or not?
It was underpriced.
Underpriced.
You're hearing, should have been
more. You're hearing that from Rabbi Reuben himself. But Rabbi Reuben walked into class already accusing me of having had the tape since 1970. Yitzchak, I was just informed about that tape a week ago.
Who had it?
Don't ask too many questions. But
whoever has,
must
have more. And if he doesn't allow these things,
you've got to deal with the Soloveitchik family, not with me.
But they would be proud to have this material.
Believe me, they would be very upset. The rubber attacks the right wing. Some of his grandchildren would cringe to hear that. What do you want? The Rav goes on this talk. The Rav goes after the right wing even sharper than Yitzchak does. The difference is when Yitzchak flies off the handle, I try to calm him down. I had a lot of trouble. I had a grandson this week, gave me a hard time as well, and I try to calm him down. But I really get nowhere. I can't win because of the army problem here in Israel.
He did not speak against the right.
No, he speaks
only about people who love God's.
In 56, in 56, he spoke at the RC, at the YURA. He spoke about they're checking my tzitzit. He says they're checking my tzitzit. He says, let me check their tzitzit. He says, I want to know if in Torah V'das, if every Rebbe is paid on time. And he goes in to praise Rabbi Belkin. He says, from the time Rabbi Belkin became Rosh Yeshiva, salaries have always been paid on time. And, you know, he's intimating there's a shtickle and isa d'oraita involved. Yeah, after it says, schas sachir b'yomo. Okay, anyway, be it as it may, I'm happy that Yitzchak appreciated his help. Now, I just want to say...
The other side is a
Kalmar concert. Yeah, I had no control over the way it was given to me. To say them.
I thought that was a gift.
Okay. And I enjoyed it. Yeah. And all of a sudden, I was wrong. A Kalbach concert would go for $1.5 million, you say now, $1.5 million. Okay. Now, regarding Reb Menashe Klein, Ephraim printed out for me some different talk from Reb Menashe Klein, where he deals with the Goyim being sinful and that they robbed the Moret HaMachpailah from us, that we have a real kinyan on. I'll only say this, he certainly is more open to the state of Israel than Satna. That there's no question. And it explains why on his shul he has the Kotel HaMaravi and Kever Rachel. But it's nice, the great Torah, but this is Drush. I'm going to build the world, not so much upon Drush, but upon Halacha, but let's get there. Now, from Chabad, I got a letter from a very learned individual, who's very upset with the Rabbi Reuben's constant attack on the Alter Rebbe with the concept of the soul. And he asked me to read this. I'm not going to comment, just hear it and think about it, because I have a lot to do today. Regarding a non-Jewish soul, the only one that can say what type of soul someone has is someone that understands what a soul is. A garbage man cannot give opinions about diamonds if he has no understanding in them. To all those that don't like the Alter Rebbe and what he says in Tanya about non-Jews, because in their opinion it's politically not correct to say this in this matter, they are like a goat looking at the moon, as the Hasidic mashal of someone that gives his opinion about spiritual matters when he is far from them. We don't want to bring any proof from the Holocaust. It's like trying to prove to a baby the value of money when he has no understanding in the matter. And that's a Hasidic mashal. Shmuel Plestisan. Gentlemen, I understand. I just want you to know that they're listening and they feel strongly.
I don't want to take it back. But If you have two authors,
right.
One is a great guy. He was one of the great men. I think in my class I taught the Grof, the Rambam, and Shneur Zalman Halevi are the same Madrega.
Wow.
They really work.
Okay.
And then I can go into that way. But on the other hand, you have another author called Kosh Bog.
Right.
Now, Kosh Bog, one of his books, he writes that every human being has the Zalman Halevi and a Nefesh and a Neshama. Well, Shneur Zalman writes, Goyim have a Neshama, but it's a different kind. It's a Nefesh Bahamas.
Okay, I understand.
I'm not doing politically correct.
I
have Nefesh Bahamas if you actually.
So you're quoting Rakefet, that's why, okay. Okay, I want to show you something else that he sent me. Listen carefully. And this is fascinating because you can really do a nice paper on this. Anyone here interested in writing? I have a copy, a Xerox of the handwritten letter, so you can be sure it's not a forgery. It's well known. I quoted in the Suvira that... this yeshiva bachur in Europe came to Rav Chanan Wasserman that he had, in order to go to America to save your life, you had to be a non-quota immigrant, get a non-quota immigrant visa. Non-quota immigrant visas were few and far between. So you all know there was tremendous pressure on Rabbi Revel, beginning with 38 on. And Rabbi Revel desperately sent out non-quota immigrant visas. He saved, for instance, the life of Rabbi Dr. Yosef Breuer. Gave him a job at yeshiva. He had to testify, Dean Zahn had to testify before the place, I think the State Department, that what Rabbi Breuer teach, no one could teach on Bible, which was his expertise, no one in America could teach. Students were invited to study for the rabbinate. So one of the students invited went to Rabbi Chanan Wasserman and said, I have a chance to go to Yeshiva Reb Yitzchok Chanan and get out of Europe. And Rabbi Chanan told him, Chas v'chalila, you'll be coming up Bikoris, better to stay behind. If you can go to America, it's only to a place like Tera Vadas. And of course, I'm not certain, no one knows for sure, but you can understand the implications, what happened to that student. Torah Vadas was a much smaller institution. It was not well known like Yeshiva and Yeshiva College. And obviously it could grant many less non-quota immigrant visas. Here's the opposite, a very fascinating letter from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, 1957. And he's writing to a shliach of Lubavitch in Boston. And you can understand from the letter what the story is that... correct. He's writing to... Rabbi Cement, and let me see if I can get his exact name, Chaim, Rabbi Chaim Cement. Oh, did you know Yitzchak? Interesting. So I've taught Cement, it's an interesting family. I taught both in Mechala and in BMT. I maybe even in the Kollel had Cement, so nice family. So the Shliach from Boston, a kid from Chelsea, Massachusetts, becomes friendly with him. And the kid wants to go study at the Jewish Theological Seminary. And Rabbi Cement is writing to the Rebbe, I don't know what to do here, and perhaps I should try to influence him to go to a regular yeshiva, but he's not that anxious. He has his mind set on the seminary. And the Rebbe writes back to him, I'm amazed. You mentioned the seminary. You mentioned yeshiva. Why don't you mention Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yitzchak Hochanan? That may be the place where he can truly find himself, and you should do everything in your power to influence him to go there. So that's an interesting comment on the Rebbe, that he understood a kid who had netiyot. How would you say that in English? Inclinations, proclivities. That he couldn't go to a regular yeshiva and wanted something broader, JTS at that time, and you got to know that JTS did have that reputation. So the Rebbe says, all the Rebbe's letters are being published one by one. If you go to the Chabad Library, the Gutnik Library, right above Meir Sharim, right above Kikar Shabbat, there's a tremendous, beautiful little building, and the bottom two floors is a Rebbe of, is a library that Gutnick put up of all Lubavitch Svarim. You will find there tens and tens and tens of Svarim, including the Rebbe's entire correspondence is being published letter by letter by letter with annotations. So everything is available in print or will be. Of course, they sell right there. You can buy whatever you want. It's a tremendous operation. Gutnicks, the Gutnicks, I'm not saying this because I'm prejudiced, Shmuel. It's true that the Sterner Gutnick happens to be my student. So I do have a connection. But the charity have done is unbelievable. If you want to be even more shocked, when I was the guest of the Australian Torah community, so I come into the Lakewood branch in Melbourne and I take a look. The Beis Medrash is built by Yussler and Sterner Gutnick. So I said to him, you are giving money to Lubavitch, to Lakewood? I mean, Lakewood, if Lubavitch has one major enemy in the United States, it's Lakewood. And Yussler Gutnick said to me, I asked the Rebbe if I should give them money and build their Beis Medrash, and the Rebbe said to me, Adarabba, certainly do it. So I got to give all the credit in the world. Okay, now we're in for a very important moment. What I'm about to reveal, if you have a soul of Torah and a soul that quests for knowledge, the following source will come in handy for you for the next 120 years. Now, what did we do last week? So we finished out, how could 6 million Jews allow this to happen? And there's no question that I hit the nail on the head. Everything else is secondary reasons. But when you talk, gentlemen, I'm sorry you didn't bring breakfast to class. You already missed Yitzchak Rubin's testimony that I undervalued the gift I gave him yesterday. Okay, so you missed a lot already, but I'm picking up with this. Keely, I'm in a different world now. I'm in the Holocaust leading into Zionism. So the question of how 6 million Jews could allow it to happen, gentlemen, you sit here, you all had breakfast today. You're all wearing clothes. You all had a nice, comfortable bed to sleep in last night. Sure, for you, it's hard to understand how 6 million Jews didn't rebel. What Hitler did, he took away their beds. He took away their food. Ultimately, he took away their clothes. By that time, when you're looking for scraps of bread in garbage cans, you're not in a position to rebel. And that's what comes out of all the memoir literature. In addition, we have to be honest, our own religion works against us. How many times do we say, yeah, told, Svet sein gut? And that attitude, which is optimistic, which is positive, which is healthy, which is Jewish, unfortunately, enables our enemies to butcher us, to kill us, to slaughter us. You see it with the state of Israel. We have leaders who have no direction, laissez-faire attitude. We have parties of Torah parties. When it comes to the heart of Torah, most Torah parties in Israel couldn't care less. They're interested in money and practical matters. So you bother them about the earth-shaking matters, they'll say to you, the plan good, we don't have to worry, it's going to be good. And this worked to Hitler's advantage. And I need not tell you from the memoir literature, including from the Mekadshei Hashem, you've seen his introduction, this is about three Yish Meisels, that even in the death camps, rumors spread, Mashiach is here. Rumors spread that the Geula is happening. And Jews really believed it. People heard a shofar in the middle of nowhere. And yet, and of course, by the time we woke up, 1 million were dead, 2 million were dead, 3 million were dead, 4 million were dead, 5 million, 6 million, etc. Now, then we came on to the other question that everyone asked, how could God allow it to happen? And the truth of the matter is, I should have said what I said and ended that part of the lecture and got on to Zionism, because the question is not how God could allow it to happen, how man could allow it to happen. God gave us freedom of choice. The fact that he gave us freedom of choice means everyone in this class can be a Shoma Mitzvah, can be an Ohev Torah, can strive to be a Talmud Chacham, or you can be a murderer, a thief, a robber, a seducer, a rapist, and you have absolute, total freedom of choice. No one can stop you. And this is why in Chinuch, the worst chinuch you can get in the modern world is chinuch in a ghetto. The best chinuch you can get is what I used to tell my grandchildren. My grandchildren were very fortunate. Growing up, they had four loving grandparents giving them everything in the world. Unfortunately, some of the grandparents are no longer alive. But while they were growing up, nothing did they lack. And their grandfather, who's a Rebbe and supposed to know a little Torah, with his their grandfather, who they call and call Sabu, would shake them up and say to them, "You wise Alex, you're 14 or 15, you lack nothing, you have every computer game, you have everything. By the time you be 18, 19, you're going to be on drugs, you're going to be on liquor, you're going to be on women." I revealed to them the whole world. And they said, no, Sabu, you'll see. Baruch Hashem, I'm privileged to say I have seen and I am proud. But we have freedom of choice. And if you raise someone and tell them, you know, you got to be from or God is going to punish you the minute you did a sin. How many times do we read about people, Chazru B'Sheilat, he's modern Hebrew, the first time they drove on Shabbos, God didn't kill them. Oh, that was wonderful. At that moment, they killed God. Idiots! At that moment, you killed yourself and you killed 4,000 years of blood in your veins and you disgraced your grandparents and you turned the Israeli army into murderers. Because if we're not connected to the Jews throughout the ages, we have no right here. Our right to the country is the fact that this is our land that God gave us. And this goes with a Jewish lifestyle. But if you don't teach kids to think that way, they come out of the ghetto and you punish Shalom choices in front of them. And as Rakepit used to say, when Russians came out of communist Russia and for the first time in their lives had freedom of choice, again, you can't appreciate this, but those within the movement used to quote me, I always used to say, depend upon the Russians to make the wrong choice the first time they have freedom of choice. And believe me, I can prove it. Depend upon the Russians to make the wrong choice the first time they have freedom of choice. But what could I do? Jews will continue to ask how God allowed this to happen. And if I just try to tell them what kind of stupid question is that, you have freedom of choice, Mendel will be out of business. No one will want to study Jewish philosophy, Jewish theology. Everyone will walk away and say, Rakepa gave us a silly answer. Let it stand. Why waste our time? Now, many answers have been given about the Holocaust. We're going to spend quite a few weeks on it. These answers motivate us, pulsate within us, aggravate us, challenge us until this very moment. The only answer, the most basic answer, and the Rav, as I told you in private discussion, I quote him, anyone who tries to give a reason for the Holocaust and why God punished us is a fool, an idiot. And the Rav could be quite sharp. Yitzchak heard the tape, and as I told you, he went after Lakewood with pretty strong language. The Rav could be quite sharp. And he felt the only answer was, Hestapanim. And as I said to you at the end of the class, Hestapanim, I gave you the source in the Torah, the whole book of Iyub is Hestapanim. And what's amazing about Hestapanim is that even for tzaddikim, it's not just the punishment for sin. Someone shot at me the question, I forget who, but it was a very good question, that in the Torah, Hestapanim appears to be a punishment for sin. In Sefer Iyub, it is just the opposite. Iyub was a tzaddik. Iyub was upgehit. How would we say that? Observant, careful. He was punctilious in his relationship with God. And nevertheless, look what the sun did to him. So that's the book of the year. And then we hold on 1 second. We spoke about Akedat Yitzchak and the machlokes between Mori Rebbe and one of his partial Talmidim, because I don't want to blame the Rav for Dubi Hartman. Lakewood and Chaim Berlin also have a share in Rabbi David Hartman, Rabbi Dr. Professor David Hartman, whatever title he uses. But the Dubi considers Akedat Yitzchak a disgrace to the Torah. And the Rav considers it the most important Pasha, because Masa Abad, Simon Labanim. And I just read some assimilated Jew. Again, the newspapers interview Jews. They don't interview Rakefet, take my word for it. So they're interviewing this Jew from France. There was just some big anti-Semitic incidents in France, as you probably know. And this Jew says, I'm ashamed to teach my children about Judaism. All there is a history of martyrdom. We suffer, we're murdered, we're killed. Throws it all out. All right. Zalalem in Pashat Akedat Yitzchak. And this is Hest upon him. Now there's one tremendous, I'm coming now into a heavyweight question. Yitzchak, did you want to ask anything? I'm ready to roll.
The problem in Israel was just Drush. But he tried to show that Theo and Noah were the same type of personality.
Only concerned with themselves. It's basically the Medrashim, portray Eve like that. So even if you say that's true, that he used to let, it's based upon the fact that he used to, the rabbi heard the same drush, but it's also midrashim, that he used to let his kids make parties and then he'd bring korbanot. No, why don't you stop the kids from making wild parties and then you bring sin offerings? Now you should care about someone else. But nevertheless, he wasn't the Russia. Okay? He was, Noach ish tzaddik, Hayab Doratov. It wasn't the Russian. Gentlemen, now there is a tremendous question. And this takes us into the, for the sake of being understood, I'll use popular language, the Haredi world. Haredi world, I don't know how many of you were raised in Chinuch Atzmai, where your sisters went to, where your wives went to Beis Yaakov. I have been told time and again, when a kid raises a question about the Holocaust, they tell them no one can understand it, and they won't allow any questions. Period. No questions. Kid raises a very serious question. And I know children who raised this in Chinuch Atzmai and Beis Bata Yaakov. They got their faces smacked. Many of these kids are not religious today. Haredi world goes with a principle. It's a very recent principle. It's not more than 90 years old, basically. A concept of Das Teir. Da'at Torah. They pronounce it. A principle began in Yiddish-speaking countries. We call it Das Teir. Now, what does Das Teir mean? If you take Das Torah with its widest application on any issue in life, what the rabbis say has to be followed and is inevitably correct. All right? If you take it more narrow, it means on anything pertaining to halacha, religion, hashkafa, the rabbis have to be listened to. They are correct. What do I mean more narrow? I'll give you a simple example. We've spoken about it many times. I've lived with this. I've suffered with this. I have to be honest with you. I didn't go into great deal in my book because to tell a certain chapter, I'm so embarrassed. You know, I say when you write Torah history, you have to write the truth. But it doesn't mean you have to write everything. Not everything has to be written. Should we demonstrate the free Soviet Jewry? Many great rabbis said no. Shtatlanut. Well, if you take the viewpoint that Das Torah applies to everything, you have to follow them blindly. If you take the viewpoint that Das Torah just applies to halachic issues, theological issues, philosophic issues, so even if you're a bit of a Haredi, you can still differ with them. You follow me, Shmuel? And this came up in the mid-80s, I think I told you about it. the branch of the Mossad that I was privileged to give my life for 10 years, asked me to be the liaison with one of the great Haredi lay people in Israel, who wanted to organize a major demonstration. This is about 85, 86, when it was very bad. It was the storm before the lull. Not the lull before the storm, but the storm before the lull. Very bad years, 85 into 86. Then miracles happened. And the rabbi started telling him, how can you demonstrate? And everything was called off. And I was so ashamed, you have no idea, because I had to deal with the Mossad people. Many of them were religious, but their feet were on the ground, and they knew what was happening. And they were flabbergasted. By 85, we absolutely knew the greater the demonstration, the more the impact on communist Russia. And yet, Das Taylor, totally, absolutely, completely wrong. 65? Maybe. There was a point of view to Stauffenberg. Maybe. Not going into it now. But by 85, the walls were cracking thanks to the demonstration. Ultimately, to a certain degree, our demonstrations, the Soviet Jewry, brought down the Soviet Empire. To a certain degree, had a big role. What happened in Chernobyl, 86, I believe it was. Big role with Chernobyl. No, if you take the belief in Das Torah, there's a tremendous question. Rabbis told Jews, remain behind. Every Jew who listened, 99%, was killed. Those who didn't listen were saved. The question comes to the fore very dramatically, very tangibly, with the Shanghai question. Here you have it black and white. It's 1940. We have quite a good idea of what Hitler's going to do. Jews are killed at random already in Poland. The Nazi machine is marching in strength. It swallowed up Poland. It swallowed up, ultimately, Lithuania. Marching, strength. Powerful. Threatening to destroy Great Britain. Don't have to repeat to you world history. You all took courses in it years ago. I lived it. And now, some kid, 39, waiting online in his uncle's confectionery store in Kovno. 12-year-old kid, if my memory is correct, wanted to get money to get tickets to go see an American movie, a funny movie. What was it, Groucho Marx or something? Laurel and Hardy. Laurel and Hardy. The movie had arrived in Kovno, and the kid wanted to see it. And while he's waiting online, a Japanese man was waiting to buy cake. Starts talking with the kid and strike up a conversation. And the Japanese man gives the kid the money for the movies. And the kid says, well, I don't want to take a gift. I want to repay you. He says, we're going to have a Hanukkah party in our house. Next week is Hanukkah. Come with your wife. And lo and behold, simple Sugihara and his wife went to that Hanukkah party. Out of that Hanukkah party came the salvation of Torah for many of us, myself and Yitzchak included. Nachum, Lamb, his father, obviously the children, my grandchildren included. Look, what a story. The greatest rabbi at that time, and I don't know of anyone who reveres him more in this room or in this building or in this city, as a matter of fact, than Aaron Rakefet. One of the greatest pieces I wrote that's been reprinted many times, people came to me. to reprint my scholarship, which I always gladly grant permission. And anyone listening, if you reprint, you have my permission. Someone just asked me how to write a letter. I had Sherry. Just you cite, you know, the source where it's from. Give credit. Which everyone has my permission to cite my scholarship. Chasva Chalili, you don't have to pay me a penny. So I did a monograph, Rabbi Chaim Moise Grishinsky. I grew up in a shul called Yeshiva Rabbeinu Chaim Moise. I knew so many people who knew Rabbi Chaim Moise. David Lifshitz used to talk with me about Rabbi Chaim Moise all the time. You know, others, Rabbi Gustman. So they came to Rabbi Chaim Moise. And now you just think for a minute. You kids have never faced a challenge like this. In order to get out of Lithuania, you have to go and get passage to Japan. Simple Sugiharo will grant you the right to have passage to Japan, to be there temporarily. But once you do that, the communists who have now taken over Lithuania know that you're waiting online, that you want to leave the Soviet Gan Eden, as they called it, Garden of Eden. You are an ingrate. You are a fascist. You do not believe in the magnificent Soviet dream. Workers of the world, unite. You are a traitor. Siberia. So that's the risk you're taking. You get the visa from Simple Sugihara, maybe you can go further. Get to Japan, get out, miraculously. From Vladivostok, you sail to Japan, you have to go all the way through Russia. KGB can pick you up at any minute. Do you go for that visa? Or no, you don't want to endanger your life. Excuse me, excuse me. I can't hear, all those, if you survived the cold, you survived. I know that, I'm well aware of it. We know Rabdoi Beresh Wiedenfeld, that you've been a rabbi, he went to Siberia and he survived. Imagine how he stand. People cried.
What year was this? This is 39?
40. So, 40, 41. So they went to Rabbi Chaim Moise, the last year of his life, 1940. He dies in August, if I'm not mistaken. In August, I believe. If not a little later, but I believe August. Look into Bernard Levin, you'll see. I have it in there. So they go to Rabbi Chaim Moise, ask him Mishaila, and Rabbi Chaim Moise was the posei kador. If anyone had das teira, Rabbi Chaim Moise had it. And Rabbi Chaim Moise told them, chas v'chalila, you should request a visa. Don't start up with the KGB. They can march up and down. We have movies of this, and they see just who's waiting online outside the Japanese consul in Kovna, and they'll know exactly who the traitors are. You're finished. Rabbi Chaim Moise told them not to request the visa. For some reason, and there's no way to explain it logically, if you don't believe in Hashgacha Pratit, you can hit your head against the wall. The whole Mir Yeshiva went and requested visas. What they didn't request, friends requested, people forged visas, Mir became one tremendous operation of Semple Sugihara's largeness. I met other people. Tells were individuals, but Tells was wiped out. What are you talking about? Rabinovich, the Gaon Adir wiped out, one after another wiped out. A lot of other people also requested. It wasn't just me. They saw the Mir Yeshiva boys. Individuals. I met some of these individuals. I asked them, why did you follow Mir? And one fellow said to me, my mother told me, go with the yeshiva boys, God will save them. And that's how they went, and that's how they were saved. And I don't have to tell you the price simple Sukhinkara pay. Now, I have one tremendous question. Very simple. How could Reb Chaim Moshe Grushensky, Zeicher Tzadik Levracha, make such a mistake? Where is Das Teira? And this is a tremendous question. Those who listened to Reb Chaim Moshe perished. And those who didn't listen to Reb Chaim Moshe were saved, and saved Torah all over the United States, all over Canada, to a certain degree in the state of Israel. Unbelievable. All over England. Mira wound up all over the world when they were not doctors, they were not professors. All they could do was teach Torah. And they were like a vacuum cleaner. They were sectioned in. We had, I was privileged from the seventh grade on, I had Rabbeim Gedolei Yisrael. Believe me, you haven't met Gedolei Yisrael till you were much, much older than a seventh grade student. Show me Gedolei Yisrael teaching seventh grade today. Reb Chenich Fishman in Solanter in the Bronx. It was all over, all over. Reb Chaim Berlin picked up, Teira Vadas picked up, RJJ picked up. No? So if Rav Kefir asked this question, a Charedi will slap your face and say, Aaron, I kept it a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depressed, degenerate, debauched, repetitious, malevolent Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik is asking this question. Smack his face and walk away. We don't ask questions. Sadik b'emunato yichye. You don't even give me a smile. Not bad. Chaydish Adda. Real. It's the real Adda today. Gentlemen, show me your bekiyat. Aaron Rakefet didn't ask this question. Who asked this question? Reb Chatzko Levenstein, the Mashgiach of Panevitch. And here you come to a very important principle. Gentlemen, when we speak of Hester Panim, it's not just Hester Panim on little people like us. Mi Anochi, Ma Anochi. Who am I? Aaron Rakefet, Arnie Rothko. Please. I'm a disgrace. Already I'm looking at the New York Yankee website every day to see what the heck is going on in spring training. A disgrace. Hester Panim. Even from the Gedolei Yisrael. There's no concept of Das Teira here. God hides from everyone. As the Chazon Ish said, and I've quoted him many times already, Perek Bet on Hilchot Shechita hides even from the Chazon Ish. This is Hester Panim. Reb Chatzkel Levenstein is magnificent. Tell you something interesting. Beis Yaakov used to publish a journal. I don't believe they publish it anymore. I subscribed to that journal in America and afterwards when I came in Aliyah. In the Beis Yaakov journal, Adar Nisan, 1974, on page 5, there's this very question being asked of Reb Chatzkel Levenstein.
What is the name of this journal?
Beis Yaakov. That's what it's called. It is cited, I'll give you an easier source to find it in, the book I mentioned last week and 2 weeks ago, Zerech Vahaftik, Palit V'Sarid B'mei HaShoah, on page 154. And Reb Chatzkel says something so sound, so basic. He says, when you ask a rabbi a question, a rabbi can only answer with logic, with common sense, with halachic reasoning. You have a framework. At times, God thinks differently. We can't be angry at the rabbi for answering what he answered. It simply means that God willed differently. And he says so beautifully that Uftehi Shegamdat Moran Rabchai Moisik Vishenskis Letzau Lo Chaitano Chemai Hishtadlut Letzait Mishetach Hakibish Harusi Lahagish Lishiltonot HaKommunistim Bakashal Yitzim Mirusia Haitam Bechezkat Sakana Mamashit Al Kain Dava Akum Al Filu Kishamatsliach Lo Nehefach Beglau Kach Ledava Yashar Rak Dihim Atzat Hashem In Rak Be'im Hi Atzat Hashem Hi Takum. And I have to tell you, this is so important to understand. Rabbis are only mortals. No one in the Jewish religion speaks ex cathedra. If you believe the spiritual leader speaks ex cathedra, you're in the wrong religion. It's not the Jewish religion. It's not the Torah religion. We answer what we answer. Halavai, we should be right. Many times, historically, we see the greatest rabbis were incorrect. Not that they were incorrect. The answer was logically and rationally right. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu willed otherwise. And that's a fabulous answer. And you can deal with children in Chinuch Atzmai, in Beis Yaakov, if they ask this question and they're not satisfied with the answer they're getting, or they're not getting any answer at all, tell them about Reb Chaskul Levenstein's answer. Now, if I was sitting next to Reb Chaskul Levenstein, I would have said to him, then you know who Reb Chaskul Levenstein was, he was the Talmud Mufat of Reb Yeruchim Lubavitz, the Mir Mashgiach. He was Mashgiach in Mir. Reb Chaskul was Mashgiach in the Old Mir. Reb Chaskul was Mashgiach in Shanghai. Reb Chaskul was Mashgiach in Panovich. I would have said to Reb Chaskul, Rebbe, Moriu Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, says exactly the same thought. You know where? And it's fascinating, because this is the only time, looking to my work on the Rav, looking to the footnote, the only time Rav Shach attacked the Rav on this thought. Because if the Rav is right, Rav Shach is finished. He's off the map. And if Rav Shach is right, the Rav is off the map. No, Yosef Yechav. Didn't the Rav darshan on the machloket between Yosef and his brothers about the dreams, what was the machloket about? And didn't the Rav differentiate between halacha and hashkafa? When it comes to halacha, we paskin. The peitim shomat the paskins. The tanur, the achnayi, the sugyim, bab metziya, daf nun tes, what did the chachamim say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? But out, lo basha mayim hi. Ephraim, that's the height of chutzpah. Were you taught to talk that way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Where'd you grow up? Montreal? Where were your roots? Toronto. All right. Montreal would have been better, because there they have real Haredes. Toronto is just a Johnny come lately to the map of Haredesatzia. He grew up in Toronto. Yeah. Would you talk like that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And yet, Chazal, it's an open Mishnah. No, in Rosh Hashanah. Afilu atem shogigim, afilu atem mezidim, ein li moadim, eilu, eilu, God has to follow the beitin shomata. We paskin what we paskin, and we never have to look over our shoulders. When it comes to hashkafa, we can have all the machloket in the world, but there we have to look over our shoulders and see what God wants. Remember the way the Rav described it? That the what was the machloket, the brothers and Yosef, that Yosef said, we got to get ready to leave in Egypt. We have to get ready for a new society. We have to get ready for a new culture. We have to be ready to raise kids like Ephraim and Manasseh, who are going to go to university and go to college and be part of the Egyptian culture as well. And the brothers laughed at him. Why are you worried about tomorrow? I'm quoting the Gemara in Chagiga. Well, why do you have to worry about tomorrow? We're in Eretz Canaan now. We know how to deal. We know how to live. We know what to do. And logically, the brothers were right. Had we not listened to Yosef, we would not be sitting here today. The Hashgacha ruled like Yosef HaTzadik. And that's exactly what Rav Levinstein said. It is very powerful. It is very upright, decent, understandable. And you know what makes me happy? Hold on one second. I don't have to say rabbis made a mistake. I feel as if I knew Rav Chaim Weizer. I was in his office where he lived in Vilna. I stood outside the windows of the apartment which he resided in. You don't know who Rav Chaim Weizer was. A gadol shel gedolim. He had one daughter. The daughter was engaged to be married. She died at the age of 17 while engaged. The whole world came to comfort him, and he comforted everyone. His office was filled with people running away from Hitler. A young couple came to see him for a bracha. They were getting married, a yeshiva student. And he asked the girl, do you have a mother, a father? She said, no, I'm an orphan. Has anyone explained to you Tarat Mishpacha? She said, not really. He walked to the side of his office, sat down with the girl in a corner, and kept everyone else waiting while he told her the essence of Tarat Mishpacha. He then said to his Rebbetzin, go with her to mikveh and make a kibud for the day of their wedding. These are great Jews, so I don't have to say he was wrong. He was right. But God willed otherwise. It's a very powerful answer. And this is Hester Panim. And it affects everyone, from the Ktanim to the Gedolim. Yes, Gili.
Why was the idea of Hashgacha and Halacha mutually exclusive to Rav Shach?
Ah, because Rav Shach understood the Rav's Masbir. Oh, you're missing the Drasha. You didn't hear my good friend Aaron Raketter at the 10th yard side of the Rav. The OU approached him. I have to thank the OU. They're my biggest supporters. YU doesn't know I'm alive, but the OU knows I'm alive. They came to me. Would I record 6 90-minute tapes on the Rav and religious scientists? It was Rabbi Kripke's idea. I looked at him like he was crazy. I said, 9 hours on one little topic? I said, let me think about it. I gave 6 shayurim in the kollel. No one was allowed to speak until 1 hour and 35 minutes. Were you in the class? You remember, Yitzchak?
I sat quietly.
No one was allowed to speak. The only one who opened his mouth was Reuben Bleich, walked in one slate and opened his mouth. They had to take it out of the tape. 9 hours. It's my best effort ever. The president of the OU told me he had a
drill. Put that out in the CD.
I don't know. I believe say that it's on the YU website. Say that. What can I do? All my tapes. I can't worry about. If you want, you can find it. Gili, the Rav used this analogy to the machlokes over Mizrahi and Akuda. He said, "My father. He puts his father as Yosef HaTzadik. He foresaw the future." One had to be a Mizrahiite. One had to be more open. We're going into a new culture. The old world is going to be destroyed. All the Rabbanim laughed at him. All the Gedolei Hadar laughed at him. All the Gedolei Hadar ostracized him. He describes the way they drove the Mizrahi Rabbanim out of the Batei Medrash, out of the Shtiblach. Study that, Russia. And the Hashgacha rang out. Mizrahi was right. The Rav gave this talk at a Mizrahi convention. If not for Mizrahi, where would we be today? Who built the yeshiva in Israel? Who built the religious kibbutzim? Who built and has the yeshiva? Who built the religious part of the army, which today is the entire army, etc., etc.? You follow? Oh, Rav Shach understood very well. Gili, I look at you and I have to bite my tongue with when I talk about Rav Shach. Look at that in Mamalashin. Did you ever hear Rav Shach speak? I have him on tape. I record it in the Israeli TV where he speaks in public, begins in Hebrew, and when he gets emotional, totally Yiddish. He cannot say it in Hebrew. So I have a terrible problem. I'm talking about Rav Shach and the Rav. Ich will read in Mamalash and ich will read in Yiddish. And I'm looking at a Sephardic gentleman, and I have to keep to English or Hebrew.
Or
what's the any other language? What is Gili? English. Got it, Gili? But that's the answer. But 1 second. It's in. I'll tell you where you'll find it. In the Rav, you'll find the exact page. Look into a footnote in the biography. You'll find it in Chelik Dalet of Rav Shach's collected writings and letters. Okay? And there you'll find his attack on the Rav. Okay.
1 second.
Yeah.
You tell me that Rav Grudzinski is right, but God ruled differently.
Correct.
And Das Torah would tell us that Rav Grudzinski was right, and that's right.
If I would believe in Das Torah like you just described it, I would be a very bad Jew. As I said 5 minutes ago, I would be in the wrong religion. I'm saying it so much nicer than you. Listen to me again. What's beautiful about this answer is I don't have to be negative. I don't have to maledict Rav Chaim Moshe Grudzinski. Well, if you say Beseda, God willed otherwise. Doesn't that tell you he was wrong? If all these guys are in their graves and the Mira survived, what does that tell you? But Rav Chatzkul Levenstein's answer is a beautiful answer that you can use in the Haredi world. And I stand on my 2 feet, like I told you when that kid from here
this
came.
This is not double talk?
No.
You say he was right, but God ruled it.
He was not incorrect. Read Rav Chatzkul's answer word by word. I don't consider it the... So if you take your time, I'll give you more sources that will make you happier. But my point is to be well taken. And Yitzchak, you know what's good about this? You don't have to take a kid who grew up in Mir and tell him off. A kid from Mir came to me, I told you, 2 weeks ago at the Kotel. I have nice experiences at the Kotel. This past Friday night, I told you, I had a nice experience. A Talmud of mine who's right wing, famous rabbi, came over to wish me well, to hug me. Rebbe, how are you? A Talmud of mine who's left wing and very famous came over to hug me and wish me well. This kid from Mir came over to me all perplexed. He opened up Achiezer on the issue of Geirut, and he doesn't understand what's going on in the right-wing world today. So I didn't tell him, leave Mir, throw away your black hat, take off your payas, put on a kippah frugal like Aaron Rakefet. I was able to tell him, look, these are not the great Rabbanim, these are the politicians around them who are tremendous Amei Haaretz. I said, the fact that Rav Wuzner went to see Rav Ovadia tells you who was right. I said, don't you understand it that way? I don't know what Rav Yashiv said, but I know those around him. There's one individual, an American, like most Americans, a tremendous fanatic. Americans like us, we're all fanatics on what we believe. That's part of being an American.
No.
So I told the kid, you see, that way he doesn't have to leave me. He doesn't have to spit in his Rebbeim's faces. He can be there and be a little broader and understand. So this answer, to me, is fabulous, and it's truthful. And this is why I can't foam at the mouth when you ask me about a Rebbe in 1935 told your cousins in Hungary, Czechoslovakia, not to go to America. I don't know if I would have said differently. You know, if I would be the Rebbe in 35, I look at America, everyone's Machal Shad. Remember I told you about the Munkacha last, what was it, 2 weeks ago, with 1933, I think you corrected me, with the Munkacha. I don't know, I would have said, you know, here in Europe, what do you, look, you want to throw the Chafetzchaim out? That good friend of mine, Rakefet, at the end of the Silver Era, quotes the Chafetz Chaim in Yitzchei Yisrael. I kept it translating to English, where the Chafetz Chaim says, quote, "My dear brothers, you have spent enough time in America. You have made enough money. Listen to your Rebbe who loves you. Come back to Poland. Come back to Lithuania. Come back to White Russia. These are the only places you can raise your children with Yirat Shemayim and Torah." That's the way he ends the Nitchei Yisrael. Open up the Suvira and you get the exact page. No, so now you're going to go home and take the Mishnah Berurah, throw it out. The Chafetz Chaim, throw it out. You're going to take the Likutei Halacha, throw it out. Yeah. Rakepit's approach, the Chafetz Chaim was right. What can I tell you? At that moment in time, look what happened in America. Look at my grandparents. Look at my family. Look at your family. Look at the price we paid. Look at the Lamb family, the great of Lamb family, etc. All right, we're a miracle. God willed otherwise. It's a beautiful thought. I don't have to be negative about Gedolim.
So let me ask a silly question.
Not now.
Why is it that they are ready to put God in the picture of the Holocaust?
Yeah.
But when it comes to Medina Israel, how does that...
Yitzchak, this is not a high school class. This is a postgraduate class. I guarantee you within 2 years I will have covered every question you are dreaming about.
And one day, I was a golden moon, and now I'm a high school student.
Give me 2 years. I'll give you a sauce in a minute. You'll kiss my fingers for what I'm going to give you in a minute. We'll get there. Nachum, yeah. For all those listening, you can't believe the sight in class. It is other ipso facto from the class. I never saw so many mature individuals laughing and enjoying life. But it's a sin. I have serious sources. Yeah, go ahead, Nachum. Nachum, I'm not here. I am not right wing. I am not Aguda. I will fight with them to the end. I think many of them are apikorsim, kofrim beikar, etc., etc., etc. Don't try to convince me. But I love Torah, and I love all Jews, and I love Talmidei Chachamim, and I love Shemesh Shabbos Jews. And it would hurt me to have to say to Rav Eliashiv that you're not a good Jew. You understand? So I have a way out. Let me enjoy it. I love Rav Chatzkul Levenstein. I knew his son-in-law. He was Mir. I knew his daughter. Oh, what people. What wonderful Jews. God willed otherwise. Baruch Hashem, I'm sitting here. You want me to say something? It's not that they were wrong. Rav Kook was right. When that Jew from that Farbstein, that manufacturer from Warsaw, came to Rav Kook and said, "Rebbe, I'm visiting from Poland. Do I have to observe 2 days Yontif? I'm going back." Daiti lachzor. Rav Kook said to him, "There's no such thing. Daiti lachzor. Daito lachzor. You're all wrong. One day, Chas v'chalila, you should go back. But Rebbe, Yechgei Tzedek, can't be. Can't be." And in the Holocaust, they said, Farbstein said, "Oy, was Rabbi Kook correct? Halavai that I wouldn't have come back." Okay? Halavai. So that I know is a fact. I don't know with the Rebbe, but with Farbstein, it's a famous story. He was a great manufacturer, Yid Tzadik, a Shemesh Shabbos. He was the head of the Mizrahi in Poland. And he went back. What a mistake. So if it'll make you feel better, it's not that everyone else was wrong, but Rav Kook was right.
We're here among religious people, but I know a lot of secular Israelis. I know, the ones who came in the 40s, this is the first thing they always bring up. They always say the Rabbanim told us to say. I don't know if they're being sincere.
I told you a million times, I'll tell you again, I'll get to the Satmar Rebbe. The Satmar Rebbe visited Israel after he was thrown out of Israel. When a person lives in Israel, not that they live, lo taki yetchem ha'aretz, you're not worthy of living here. Satmar Rebbe came here and he went to America, 46, by way of Switzerland. So the Rebbe came back, it was about 56 the first time. And it made headlines. The Rebbe came back and he already now was at his height in health and power, prestige. America, the revolution happened, And the head of police in Kiryat HaYarzeh was born and raised in Satmar. So the head of police in Kiryat HaYarzeh was a high-ranking police officer, came to see the Rebbe. Came into the Rebbe, and the Rebbe looks at him, and the Rebbe says to him, if your father would see you now, without a beard, without payas, your father, what would he say? He'd be shocked. And the police chief looks the Rebbe in the eye and says, Rebbe, if my father had not listened to you, he would be standing here now with me. And the Rebbe paused and said, we did a lot of tshuva for that. What he meant, I have no idea. No one had the chutzpah to ask the Rebbe, you're absolutely right. You think you're telling me something new. Twice I lectured in public in Israel. I mentioned the Satmar Rebbe. A guy yelled out from the audience at the top of his lungs, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. And each time they told me afterwards that he was the only one in his family. He was the Shegetz, the Bnei Kivanik, who went in Aliyah, and the whole family perished. And he is the one with Banamu B'nei Banam Oiskim B'Torah V'Mitzvah. Let me go a step further. I have an unbelievable source for you. Gentlemen, this is powerful. This is a source, the same theme, the same concept. I have a friend, I'm very proud to say among my friends, is Rabbi Dr. Avram Abba Weingart. Have you heard the name? Those of you that haven't heard the name, make believe you did, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Avram Abba Weingart, Yitzchak lives a block and a half from you. He is the grandson of Rabbi Eliyahu Bushko, the founder of the yeshiva in Monterey. How do you pronounce it? What's the right pronunciation? I was corrected already that I'm saying it in the American language. Monterey. Am I pronouncing it right? Switzerland. Montreux. Say in Los Angeles, they say Monterey. Montreux. Okay. I hope I have it right. If anyone wants to correct me, you're welcome to. Okay. He was the Talmud Mufak of the Sri Deyesh after World War II. He grew up on the Sri Deyesh's lap because, you know, his own father, Rav Shaul Weingart, who was the Talmud Mufak of the Sri Deyesh before World War II, was killed by a trolley car. It's a very sad story. 1946, they took the Sri Deyesh in. He had nowhere to go after the Holocaust, and they built him a mother-daughter apartment, and the Sri Deyesh lived there to the end of his life. A few months ago, the Avram Abba gave a drasha at the brit of his new grandson. And Rabbi Avram Abba combines tremendous Torah knowledge, general knowledge, and it's a PhD, and a tremendous Zionist, tremendous real Mizrahiite. We're both in the exact same camp. His only problem is he does not read English well and does not speak English well, which is so strange for a Swiss Jew. French? Perfectly, but not English. Okay? And he tells the following story at the brit. He gave me a printout of his talk. When he was studying here as a young bacha, he was invited one Shabbat to Netanya to a family called Bleichbad, who were related to his grandfather. And he got into one of the shtiblach in Netanya with his family, and one of the Jews davening there came over to him and said to him, where are you from? He said, from Switzerland. From where? He asked me. I told him, Montreux. He said, you're from Montreux? Did you know Rabbi Eliyahu Butchko? I said, yes, that was my grandfather. His face changed. Every color went through his face. And he said to me, let me tell you a little story that happened with your grandfather that changed my whole life. And this is what he told me. Quote, When I was a young bacher, I was in Switzerland, Montreux, in the yeshiva of your grandfather. And I was what they call a chutzpan. I always say in English, a wise aleck. A chatzuf, you would say in Yiddish. And it was during the Second World War, and Shabbat for the Sudash Lishit, Shalashudas as we call it, all the students of the yeshiva would go to your father's house, and your father would dashen on the pasha, the Yonadi Yoma. And already at this time we started to hear what was happening in Eastern Europe. And one time in Shabbos, we went down to your grandfather's house. Your father was talking about prayer, the importance of prayer. And in the middle of his talk, I interrupted him and with chutzpah I said to him, it says in davening, Shomer Amo Yisrael La'ad. And how can this be? We hear tens of thousands of Jews are being slaughtered daily, men, women, children, old people, young people. Is this what we call Shomer Amo Yisrael La'ad? Your grandfather looked at me, was silent for at least 2 minutes, and then he said to me, Gamani Shoel Mamash et Otosha Ela, Achani Shoel Ota Bisman HaTfilah. I ask that exact same question, but I ask it while I'm davening and facing the Almighty. And this Jew answered, added, that answer changed my entire life, and I turned into a different person because of your grandfather. And you see, that is very powerful. That is Hester Punim. We have no answers. It's arrogant, chutzpah, for us to think we can contrive answers. The question is overwhelming. How could God allow it to happen? But that very question we have to ask of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hester Punim is Hester Punim. Every Jew, ignorant or Lamdan, Russia or Tzadik Gomor, total Hester Punim. And that's a magnificent story. I give Avraham Avo all the credit. If you want to go a little further in our relationship, I'll tell you. My first class in Michlala in 1979, they gave me a postgraduate class. Very bright girls. I don't know if you have girls like that today. I had in my class girls who knew all of Shas, Shisha, Sidre, Mishnah, backwards and forwards, that their fathers had raised them, and they were raised on a very high level. This young lady, very bright, fabulous girl. So one time in class, I spoke about the Sri Dayesh, who he was, what he wrote. Sri Dayesh, they considered him, if you read Making of a Gadol, the Sri Dayesh was considered, if you read Akiva Weinberg, the greatest mind in the European yeshiva. That they considered him bigger than anyone. That's why the Slabodka, the Mashkiach, went out of his way. He was very stiff. The Sri Dayesh wanted to learn Russian, became too open-minded. That's why they married him off at a young age. A lot of tragedy in the Sri Dayesh's life. It's a pasha, real different pasha of tragedy. But he went on to become the Sri Dayesh. Went on to become PhD, went on to become the rector of the Hildesheimer Rabbinic Seminary. Very tragic. And he couldn't live in Israel afterwards. Where did he belong after World War II? But But the truth is, he could never come to Israel because in Israel they have to take sides. You either go with Panovich or you go with Hebrew University. And he was caught between two worlds. Not so simple. Either you go with Aguda or you go with Mizrahi. And he was caught between two worlds. And he often said, he wasn't joking, that he remained in Switzerland because there he could be who he was and no one but no one bothered him. I'm going to give a source in a minute. Don't miss the end this year. You know, I'm going to give a source in a minute. I'm saying, don't miss the end of this year. You got to go to teach now, I know. Okay, what sefer are you holding? I don't recognize it from afar. What sefer? What sefer is that?
It's Rabbi Sachs.
Ah, Rabbi Sachs. Okay, gee, you're in good company. You know what happened at his funeral, right? At his funeral, they sent the body for burial for Israel. The Chevra Kadisha already dug a grave among the maskilim, the religious maskilim. And the Chevron Rosh Hashiva, Rav Chatzkel Sano, who was his childhood friend, who was ill at the time, came from his sickbed with his cane on Rehov Yaffa, put his cane in front of the bier, in front of the stretcher with the body, and said, "You're not going further. He has to be buried not among the maskilim, but among the Gedolei Yisrael, Chelkat HaRabbanim." And they tried to argue, the grave is already dug, this, that, the other thing. Nothing helped. They waited 2 hours, the grave was dug, and they buried him in Har Menuchot in the Chelka Parachon. So I mentioned the Sri Deyesh, and you should know that was the first time she heard about the Sri Deyesh. She later marries the Sri Deyesh's Talmud Mufak, and lives in Switzerland, where he is Rosh Yeshiva in Eitz Chaim, which is the only yeshiva in history, the Kamen Aliyah. In total. The whole yeshiva came. Where is it today? In Kochav Yaakov, if I'm not mistaken. It's a Hezda yeshiva. It's the only yeshiva that the entire yeshiva picked up and came on Aliyah. More than that, in the room at the other end of the hall, I was lecturing in the early 80s. On the Sri Deyesh, mid-80s. Blonde-haired kid was sitting in back of my Talmud. He heard about the Sri Deyesh. That youngster went on to do the final doctorate that Professor Yitzchak Tversky supervised at Harvard. It is my student, Rabbi Dr. Professor Mark Shapiro, his doctorate on the Sri Deyesh, a brilliant piece of work. And Danny, if you don't believe me, if you think I'm crying wolf, open up Mark's Harvard book that's published by some scholarly in London with quite an imprint. You'll see in the introduction, thanks to Rebbe Rav Aaron Akefet in BMT, who first opened his eyes to the Sri Deyesh. By the way, the young lady I spoke about was Yona Levy. She married Avram Abba Weingott. Her father, Zichrono Levracha, was a German trained Talmud Chacham who taught at Chorev and taught his daughter, maybe, or I don't know if he had other daughters, I know Yona best of all, but they knew Mishnah backwards and forwards. My dear students, one more source on this very theme that is absolutely brilliant. One of the greatest miracles in Israel that proves that Chazal were occasionally right. Who am I referring to? No, you all remember the little joke that the Rav Shaul Lieberman pushed in under the wire. What did we say in Ein Kelokeinu this morning? Talmidei Chachamim Mabim Shalom Ba'olam. And Professor Liebman said this proves that Chazal had a sense of humor. Because as you know, among Talmidei Chachamim, Baruch Hashem, Sizlebedik, Nu, how do you translate that? Nu, Gili, help me. It says, Levedic, it's alive, it's fire. A few fights as well, as we all know. No, who proved Chazal right? You have the greatest example of love between two Rashi Yeshiva who gave each other the world, Rav Yehuda Amital and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Rav Yehuda Amital, what a story, organized the yeshiva, told Rav Aaron, you're the Rashi Yeshiva, I'm going to step aside entirely. They remained together, built the largest Hesder yeshiva in the state of Israel, a major, major institution, b'shalom, b'shalva, mutual self-respect, and smart enough to appoint successors in their lifetime. Imagine had Lubavitch been that smart, what would be today? Wow. Gentlemen, a Talmud Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, El Yashiv Reichner, wrote a beautiful biography of his Rebbe, Be'emunato, Sipuro Shel HaRav Yehuda Amital. I quote to you from page 108 and 109, and it's exactly the theme we're developing. He had friends, he was a yeshiva boy. He didn't come from a rabbinic family, but he came from a family, yeshiva boy in Hungary. The Nazis come in, and everyone by now knows La Briotte had killed every man, woman, and child they can get their hands on who was Jewish. They're coming to Hungary, and he was convinced he would die. And he spoke with his friends, it's time to prepare for Kiddush Hashem. In other words, they're not like the B'Samim Rosh. David, that's my Sunday this year. I voted for the B'Samim Rosh. You know what the B'Samim Rosh had to say about Yehor Al-Yavar. They were loved on him, and they knew that Yehor Al-Yavar absolutely applies. We have to get ready. And his friend kept on mocking him. We don't have to get ready to die. We have to get ready to fight. We have to get out of here. We have to get Paris Yisrael. We have to do what we can. And they had this argument going on and on and on. And finally, through miracles, each one survived, and each one wound up alat matar kodesh. And he describes, after the Holocaust, he's a yeshiva bacha now in Yerushalayim, and he's taking a tour to Alon Shvut. This is before Milchemet HaShichrur, where we had three or four settlements, right? That whole area, which I only hope our leaders, God have mercy, who's leading the Jewish people, the lack of understanding, of commitment, the lack of feeling, the lack of heart, the lack of Torah, the lack of knowledge. Boy, do we lack great leaders today in a political sphere. It's very sad, for me at least. Anyway, I hope they understand what the Gush means. And Yehuda, the little Yehuda, later to be Yehuda Amital, is taking this tour, and he meets his old friend. And his friend looks at him. Yudu! You chatzit! You're the one who spoke about getting ready for Kiddush Hashem. You're alive. What happened? And Yehuda says, thank God. I was prepared, but I survived. And his friend, who had come to Israel earlier, looks at him and says, and take a look. You remained religious? Nishata mamin? Nishata dati? And as if to say, you went through hell. How did you remain religious? And Yehuda Amital gave him a classic answer. The ilu lo nishati dati? Hashayalot hayum mukhanat? Hatofaat? Hayta התופעה הייתה מוכנת יותר, מובנת יותר. Let me take off my glasses. ואילו לא נשארתי דתי, השאלות היו מובנות, התופעות הייתה מובנת יותר, יותר ברורה. What an answer. Powerful and to the point. I have no answers. I can't explain it. But if I throw away my religion, if I throw away my Judaism, will it be any clearer to me? Will I have any better answer? What insight? What an answer? What power? This is Hester Punim. We don't know. We don't understand. We have tremendous questions. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be asked these questions. Sometimes we may see an answer, we may try, we may grasp at an answer. Could be. But essentially, a believing Jew has to understand this is Hester Panim, and it affects all of us. Or as the Rav said, when he spoke about religious and irreligious Jews in his interview with the Magen Journal, whether we put on tefillin or didn't put on tefillin, whether we observed Shabbat or didn't observe Shabbat, Hitler killed all of us. It's not fair, it's not right, it's not what Kriyat Shema tells us, it's not Hashgacha Gluya in the words of the Chazon Ish, but this is the reality. Would I be any better off if I threw away Torah and Mitzvot? And if I can quote Aaron Rakefet, if we throw away Torah and Mitzvot, we've just given our enemies another victory. And you think about it. Imagine had the Jews walked away after World War II, the survivors, where would we be today? Isn't that one of the major themes in that magnificent award-winning documentary that came out 11, 12 years ago by a Yeshiva College graduate, A People Apart, am I naming it correctly? A Life Apart? A Life Apart, about Borough Park. And the star of the film, Mr. Gold, who's no longer alive, I understand, describes how he walked out of the Holocaust, no belief, nothing left, unbelievable anger. Who can blame him? And he married a survivor. Women have more sense than men. Binayate Rabban Hashim, Bigmarin Nida. And when they had children, she said to him, how are we going to raise our children? And essentially she was saying, if we raise them without Yiddishkeit, we've given our enemies another victory. And the kids reclaimed their heritage. There's a beautiful scene in the documentary where a Hanukkah party is going on and the children with beards and prayers, I believe they went to BTA high school. They went to Yeshiva College too? Yeah, wow. But real Hasidisha Jews, which YU today has many, thank God. And they're dancing with their children. And one of the brothers, and you see all the kids, you know, the kids grow up, you hear Balei Tshuva in Mikimi, in the book Mikimi, which is outstanding, by Noah Yaron. She said, you know, my children grow up, they take it for granted. One is a Breslov Chassid, everyone in the world is a Breslov Chassid. It's so easy to be a Breslov Chassid. It's so natural to be a Breslov Chassid. And what she had to go through to arrive at Breslov. And you see all these kids without a care in the world in Borough Park, Halavai. I hope some of them have come in Aliyah. I hope all of them will come in Aliyah. And the children say, when we see our father dancing with us and our grandchildren, we don't see him clean shaven. We see him with a beard and payas and Hasidish garb that he wore in his youth. So we presented one additional tremendous answer today. And that answer is that there is no answer. That is Hester Panim. And no one said it better than Rav Yehuda Amital. No one said it better than Rebbe Eliyahu Butchko. I have exactly that same question, except I don't ask a bus of a dumb, I ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's beautiful about this answer, Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, it shows you that with all the greatness of Rabbanim, and I know great Rabbanim, I've lived among great Rabbanim, I try to reflect their behavior in my own life and everything I do. I don't want to be critical. Sometimes we answer what's logical to us, but God willed otherwise. No one said it better than the Rav. Yosef V'Echav, you must look over your shoulder. Gentlemen, there is so much more to go, and Yitzchak, I promise you, I will get to all those questions. Give it time. Shlav, shlav. Wait till you see next week. I'm sailing into the Sapna Rebbe. I'm sailing into what's being said on the streets. I'm sailing in, I won't reach it next week, I won't reach it for a number of weeks. I'm sailing into Eim HaBarus Mecha, Rav Kook, our own lives. It's a world to go. Gentlemen, I just want to show you, this is from Friday's Jerusalem Post. You know, there's this whole debate going on about conversion, retroactive annulment of conversion. And I have to tell you, it is very hard to know a little how to learn. Halavai, I wouldn't be in Amaritz. It would be so much easier to read a newspaper. Regarding Barbara Sulfa's diatribe, this is a guy complaining about Barbara Sulfa who attacked Rosenblum Jonathan, who supports, he marches to
Jewish,
the...
Excuse me?
Yeah, beside that. This is Rosenblum who marches to the Haredi tune, and now this is defense. About Rosenblum and the Haredim is essentially irrelevant to the parent question. Are IDF conversions valid? The traditional halachic standard demands full commitment to a life of Torah and mitzvah. This has been the standard for millennia and should be applied today so that these converts will be acceptable to all other Jews. It has nothing whatsoever to do with army service, however commendable it may be. The notion of entry-level Jews is an invitation by Sofa and an offense to everyone who takes Judaism and the traditions of the Jewish people seriously. Someone named Yisrael Rotman Zichron Yaakov. Gentlemen, wow. Rakefet gave 1 year worth of lectures or more on gay rights. We can throw out all those lectures. So simple, so beautiful. What do you do with a gay who says, I want to convert? Now let's follow literally the process of conversion in the Gemara, Daf Mem Vav Amud Bet, Yavamet Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. Take a look at how many mitzvot we inform him. What do we do with the ger who says, Hitgayati Vein HaAkum, apply to me the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Samach Bet Samach Gimel, how many Kabanot Chatat do I have to bring because I never knew there was a Shabbat in the world. Oh, is this an oversimplification? It is frightening. Ha'amratzit cho'geget. This is not even a Purim joke. It's worse than that. But you see, this leads me to a question. If anyone wants it, you're welcome. I suffered enough. If it leads me to a question I was asked many years ago, and I stand on my answer. Rabbi Lichtman was asked the same question. We essentially gave the same answer. Do you teach a kid Kitzur Shulchan Aruch? And you know something? Kitzur Shulchan Aruch has one tremendous drawback. It teaches a kid there's one way, nothing else. And you know something? A kid of 8 or 9 is old enough already to know there are other ways. If you use the Kitzur, you have to use it in a way that you broaden it. Because the Kitzur is a very powerful sefer. I know that when I was a kid, I learned 2 things by heart at the age of 12. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and Pirkei Avot. This is fabulous, but it has one downside. A kid can wind up, oy vey, if you daven havara svadit, you're not yotzei. Yosef, the Karite, told me a whole thing with Rabbi Ovadia Saturday night. Ask him about it. Where Rabbi Ovadia contradicts himself that if a Svadi hears Kriyat HaMegillah or Pashat Zacha in Havarashkin Aziz, he is not Yosef. If we pastor like that, wow, are we dividing up the Jewish people? That goes against the Chofetz Chaim, goes against the Mishnah Berurah. Shibolet, right or wrong. Gentlemen, wow, did I suffer. Next. A Talmud wanted to comfort me, and he said, Rebbe, you are mentioned in a book about Russian Jewry, put out by Yotzko many years ago. The Silent Revolution, it's true. Rakefet, my name is spelled, etc. I want to go on record. When this book came out, it's one of the reasons I said to myself, Aaron, the day will come perhaps when they'll lift the security clause and you will write the real story. This book is fine. It is. The facts are garbled, but I couldn't say anything. I was under a security clause. Rabbi Rakefet, we'd like to interview you about how Essence got out of Russia. You want Rabbi Rakefet? That's my father. He went to China to convert Mayor Tsidung. When he gets back in 82 years, I'll have him call you. Until then, he cannot speak to you. But I want to thank the people for sending me the Soviet Revolution. I happen to have the book, and if anyone wants the copy of the key pages, you're welcome to it, but you'll see when my book comes out, it has Al Racho Bitcha Katana. The New York Times had a beautiful article on Tchelet. There's just been a big discovery, and it seems the Tchelet they're putting on the tzitzit may be correct. So Baruch Hashem, I can't wear Tchelet because my Rebbe went crazy when he spoke about Mesorah and Tchelet. But for those of you that didn't hear the Rav, you have a right to wear Tchelet, Gesundheit. I want to wish everyone a happy Adar. It should be L'Simcha, L'Sason, L'Geula, L'Shleima. Purim is a Chagagula, and if Purim is here, Pesach is here, and Halavai b'chodesh Nisan Nigalu, v'Halavai b'chodesh Hazeh b'Nisan Nigael, l'Besora Tova Yeshuot Nechamot Olenu v'Kol Yisrael, until we meet again in health and happiness. And I want to welcome Gili back with a big mazel tov. And all I can say, the B'Samim Rosh would be very upset with you because your beard has grown longer since your marriage. And I don't recall if you were here or not for those lectures of the B'Samim Rosh. But we'll hit it next week with the Chatam Sofer, the week afterwards, chopping off the head of the B'Samim Rosh. And David, see that your wife goes into prenatal, pagyot, pagim, prenatal care. Tremendous shortage in Israel. And I'm going to tell my grandson too, you don't want to be a Rebbe, at least be in prenatal. Can't believe me to get an out in happiness. Das Vedanya. Thank you.